one body bag or two?
Hello, hello, and welcome everybody to Tea Time Horror Stories or Tea Time Horrors, whichever tickles your fancy. We are back again for episode number 4 of season 3.
Yeah.
So, and you have your lovely host, me, and then of course you have my second host,
Joe.
He is here. We do not have a third person, but we are in the talks with a couple people, a couple friends of ours who are interested in wanting to come on to our podcast to
be a co-star.
Right, to be a guest for a couple of our episodes.
So guest speaker.
We're kind of excited about that. So we're still working in the details with them. One of them, well, I'm just going to say his name is Shannon, and he is from Shiitake Podcast. So if you guys, you know, want to go take a look at that podcast, by all means, go take a look at that podcast.
If you like anime.
Right. I was just about to say, they cover anime reviews. So if that's something that, you know, tickles your fancy, go say hello to them. So Shannon is one of them, and then his lovely, lovely wife, Mary, also wants to come on here too. So we have a couple people who have showed interest. That being said, it is the week of the murder.
Yes. True crime.
True crime. Okay, we'll call it as it is, true crime. So it is the week of the true crime, and I'm excited.
Yeah, you really did look like you were pretty excited throughout the week editing your episode.
I worked on this episode a lot, and to me, this is kind of like a return episode for me. This is the first true crime episode that I'm handling after being gone for a really long time, and this whole entire week that I was working on it and doing my research, it just really reminded me of how much I really like doing this and how much time and effort that I put into it. And it just, again, it just reminded me of this is what I really, really, really like to do. And even after Joe and I went and got dinner just a moment ago before recording this, I was just going on and on about how
she loves murder.
I do. I like murder. And it's like, you either meet people who are just like, so tell me about you, Sam. Who are you as an individual? And you're like, should I tell them? Should I tell them about my hidden, not so hidden obsession of anything murder or true crime? Because usually you get two responses when it comes to this. Either one, they look at you like you're a weirdo, or two, oh my god, I'm a huge true crime enthusiast too, which is kind of the one that I've been getting a lot of lately, which is great to meet other like-minded individuals. And then when you dig deep and they are like, how much of a true crime junkie are they? And then you realize, oh, she's
a little extra when it comes to it.
Right. That's putting it lightly. Thank you, Joe, for putting that lightly, because true crime's just, it rocks my world. I mean, if I can literally meet someone who can talk true crime to me, and just like, that's the equivalent to talking dirty to me. If you could just be like, and then he bludgeoned her to death, I'd just be like, ooh, what did he use? So, I don't know, it's just something I've had since I was young. I think I was exposed to it at a young age, and it's kind of just, the obsession going away just got worse and worse as I got older.
You mean better?
Better, I guess. And we don't know who said that, you know, whose book that got better, but it apparently it did for me. That being said, I'm excited to get started with my true crime today. But first off, Joe made us some tea, actually. He made us a really lovely drink. And of course, I had to ruin it by adding sugar to it.
A lot of sugar.
I could have added more. I really, really probably could have added more, but I'm trying to cut down on the amount of sugar that I have. So, Joe, why don't you tell us about this tea?
Well, the tea that I got for us today doesn't really have a name for it. Oh, it just says tea pigs bursting with berries, and it says superfruit. Great taste. That's literally all the bag says. And it has a number of different ingredients in it, and she was, whatever reason, and surprisingly, she was craving some hibiscus tea, and that is the number one ingredient in this tea. It's got hibiscus, elderberries, black currants, regular currants, natural flavors. I don't know what natural flavors are when it says everything in here is organic. and cranberries and blueberries, so that's the reason why it's so bitter.
Well, and of course me, I have to sweeten the deal just a wee bit, and I have to add sugar to it. He did add honey to it, but that's not enough for me and my sweet tooth, and I added sugar. It would have been nice if I had simple syrup to put
simple
it
in. Simple syrup, yeah.
But all I had was sugar, so we just added some sugar to that, and it's to my liking. And it's iced.
Yeah, which it's iced tea.
Which is what I like. I prefer tea iced. I prefer most of my things cold, even though I get cold all the time.
Yep.
So,
it's going to be 3 o'clock in the morning, wanting iced coffee in 40-degree weather, and she's shivering the whole time.
Right. I mean, as most of you guys, I've mentioned before 1,000 times before, my body is not able to regulate temperature. I'm either really, really, really cold, which is 99.9% of the time, or I'm really, really, really hot. But mostly it's really, really cold and I can't regulate my body temperature. So I'm usually that person in 90 degree weather wearing 2 jackets because I'm cold. So, but I'm okay with that. I prefer to be cold than hot because if you're cold, you can at least bundle up. You can put on jackets and jackets, sit in front of a heater, you're fine. But if you're cold, you know, it's frowned upon to walk around naked. So in most places, it's frowned upon to walk around naked. So that being said, I'm pretty sure that's TMI for some of you guys.
I know I'm sitting here and I'm nodding, and the audience can't see that, but I'm agreeing with what Sam's saying.
So what I'm saying is I prefer cold weather, even though I'm cold all the time. So I'm a cold-blooded person. It's what happens when you're a snake. Alrighty, so that being said, I hope you guys are excited to get started with today's episode, because I know I've been dying to talk to somebody about this. This is the only downfall that I have. When I get really into something and so passionate about something, I want to talk to everyone about it. And even though they may not want to know about it, like, I have a friend.
But that's the thing, is I do want to know about it, and you know I want to know about it, so you're trying so hard to keep it a secret from me while we're doing it.
Right, and I see this guy every day, and I'm just like, bro, I just learned this new thing, I need to tell you about it, but I can't because I need to save it for the podcast.
Well, we live together, I would be surprised if we didn't see each other
right.
Every day.
And then it's even more worse, so I tried to, like, talk to Lyndon about it, too, and I was like, Lyndon, I'm covering this case, and, like, A, B, C, D, and we're telling him about it, and he was just like, okay, like, you could tell he was...
Yeah, he had Dragon Hunter on his mind.
You could tell he was trying to be engaged with me, but then at the same time, he's just like, not
I should pull back from this conversation.
Right, not all that interested. I don't think he wants to hear about the death of a child, so that's a giveaway right there. So as you guys know... we are handling a murder today, and it does involve the death of a child. So,
disclaimer.
Yeah, disclaimer. If this is something that bothers you, if this is something that you don't want to hear, I am letting you know this does involve an underage child, and it can be a little sensitive to some people. So.
I'm pretty sure there are people out there who are interested in this. Otherwise, they wouldn't be listening.
That being said, without further ado, let's get started. Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
Alrighty. So, let's get started. Joe, are you excited?
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Alrighty. He already knows what I'm covering because I couldn't keep it a secret. I'm sorry. I just...
Well, you told me. It also doesn't help that we have the schedule.
I know. But, like, I tried to keep the case mostly quiet, but I just... When I get excited about something, it's like a fat kid in a candy shop. You can't.
For the most part, you did a really good job of keeping most of the information away from me before doing the podcast, so I could be like, no.
Oh, give me your true response. So let's get into the thick of it. Today, I am covering a case. Have you ever heard of JonBenet Ramsey?
I think any of us 90s kids kind of remember that. It was plaster everywhere.
Right. So, most of us, as we grew up, most of us have heard of JonBenet Ramsey because we grew up with this case. JonBenet Ramsey was America's child beauty queen. Unfortunately, the key word there is was.
Was.
This young beauty was murdered at the tender age of 6 in her family's house in Boulder, Colorado on December 26, 1996. What was originally thought to be a kidnapping, a 2.5-page ransom note was found near the bottom of the stairs of their house the day she disappeared. But 7 hours later, her tiny lifeless body was found in the basement of their house. Her body was discovered by her own father, John Bennett Ramsey. A garrote was found tied around her neck, and she had sustained a broken skull from a blow to her head. The autopsy report stated that John Bennett's official cause of death was asphyxiation by strangulation associated with craniocerebral trauma. Ultimately, her death was ruled a homicide.
I mean, it's not like she fell down the stairs and strangled herself on the way down.
I mean, it could have been ruled an accident.
It could have been.
So, what we don't know.
Yeah.
That's 6 years old, might I add.
Not the picture that I was thinking you were going to put up, but yeah.
I mean, for a six-year-old, that doesn't look like a six-year-old.
No, like when I was younger, I always thought she was older, like anywhere between 9 and 10.
Right. So, we'll get into that, though.
So, as I mentioned earlier, they had thought her case was a kidnapping. The note had mentioned not to call the authorities, but it was the first thing Patsy did. Patsy's her mom, by the way. Because of this, police and dozens of people had come in and out of the house and had touched things. It wasn't until her body was found that things changed, but then a lot of evidence had been ruined. By then, a lot of evidence had been ruined and contaminated. So, I remember this case being everywhere. I was on the news 24 hours. I remember watching it because my mom was obsessed with this case. I remember growing up and reading about it myself, and I remember I had a book. I don't know where the book is at, but I have a book that's specifically about this case. And I do believe it belongs to my mom, but I, obviously being the true crime enthusiast that I was at such a young, tender little age, I took it from her because she wasn't, you know, she wouldn't know that it's missing. So, I just stuck with this one because we are so close to the same in age. Like, she was born in 1990, I was born in 89. Just gave everyone my age right there. And her story just seems so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's get into a little details about that.
Details.
So, John Bennett, Patricia Ramsey, was born August 6, 1990, to parents John Bennett Ramsey and Patsy Ramsey. She was born in Atlanta, Georgia, but her family had relocated to Boulder, Colorado because of her father's job. She was enrolled in kindergarten at High Peaks Elementary School in Boulder, Colorado. She was the youngest of 5 kids, with 3 of them being half-siblings from her father, John Bennett's previous marriage. Their names are really, really close. Her name is actually technically her father's first name kind of combined. And then her middle name is her mom's name.
Interesting.
So, yeah, they wanted to try something unique. So, they were already in their 20s at the time JonBenet's death. I don't know how to pronounce his name. She has a older brother by the name of, I want to say Brooke. It's B-U-R-K-E.
I would say that would be Brooke, but usually Brooke is spelled B-O-O-R.
Right, but maybe this is like the male version of spelling it.
I mean,
Burke. Okay, yeah, sorry. So his name, alrighty, so yeah. They were already in their 20s at the time of JonBenet's death, besides Burke Ramsey, age 9. The only sibling living at the house at the time of the event. Now, it is said one of the main reasons this case got so much attention was because of her mother, Patsy Ramsey. She was a former beauty queen, and she had entered JonBenet into a series of child beauty pageants herself. Her face was everywhere. Unfortunately, her face would be remembered unchanged and stuck at 6 years of age because her life was taken at such a young age. The crime is still unsolved and remains open as an open investigation in the Boulder Police Department. As I mentioned before, this case is still open, but personally, and a lot of other people believe this case was handled poorly and is a complete sham. It is believed the ransom note left behind was written by Patsy, and it was believed that JonBenet's body had been staged in order to cover what really happened. I will cover this a little later when we talk about the two different theories of this case. But let's take a step by step on what happened. All right. In the early hours of December 26, 1996, Patsy Ramsey woke up at her usual time to make coffee, which was around 5:30 a.m., when she discovered the 2.5-page ransom note. The note is weird to say the least. According to authorities, Patsy gave a statement on December 26, 1996 that she realized her daughter was missing after finding the note on the kitchen staircase. The note demanded $118,000. This was later pointed out to be nearly identical to John's Christmas bonus the prior year, which suggested that someone who would have access to this information was involved in this case.
Yeah, I remember hearing something about that.
Right, so it was pretty, like, out of all of them, this family was well off. They had money.
Yeah.
Money was not an issue. But why they specifically asked for $118,000,
yeah,
which was close to the bonus that he received for Christmas, it was just like, it seemed like someone had to know about that.
Yeah, it's just like, why not add that extra...
Make it 120, yeah. Even it up, round it up, or something like that.
The extra 2K.
Right. So instead, it was just 118. Mm-hmm. So it was just very oddly specific.
Wasn't there some like typos and stuff inside of on the ransom note too?
Right. We're gonna get into that right now. So the amount asked would heavily be looked out throughout the years. It was noted that the ransom note was unusually long. The FBI told the police that it was very unusual for such a note to be written at the crime of the scene. The police believed the note was staged because it did not have any fingerprints except for Patsy's and the authorities who had handled it. It was also noted that the note used unusual writing, had weird punctuations, and just weird overall. Like, people were just like, this doesn't seem like something that would be left in a ransom note. So they heavily looked over that note. So the note and a practice draft were written with a pen and notepad from the Ramsey's house. So they were able to link that together. There were many indications that the author of the ransom note was Patricia Ramsey. However, most of the evidence of this fell short and was contaminated. An outside board certified forensic pathologist who had consulted with both sides of the case said he had never seen a note like this before in his 60 years of experience, and that he did not think it was written by an outside stranger.
Well, there's a first for everything, I guess.
Right, so again, more proof that this could be an inside job. Though it was later ruled by the federal court that it was highly unlikely that Patsy wrote this note, citing 6 certified handwriting experts. But many argue to this day that other self-proclaimed experts, quote-unquote, say the note held some similarities. So you can read this note online. It's everywhere. It's kind of weird, or unless you want me to read it.
I'd say read it.
All right, just give me a second. I have it saved. Alrighty, so here it is, okay? So it starts off with, Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We do respect your business, but not the country that it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. See, she is safe and unharmed, and if you want to see her, she is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $180,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attached to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be well rested. We will monitor you getting the money early. We might call you early to arrange an early delivery of the money and hence an early delivery pickup of your daughter. Any diversion of this instruction will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you not to provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as the police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert the bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant security, spelled wrong, as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use the good southern common sense of yours, and it is up to you now, John. Victory, SBTK. I'm sorry, SBTC. Yeah, that's the Renzo note.
So many red flags pop up on that.
Right, like
just the first three lines of that ransom note screams that it's like, first of all, why not address both the wife and the husband?
Right, and it's just overall in general, like they have to go into the, if you speak to a stray dog, she dies. If you do this, she dies.
Have you ever seen Escape from New York? Escape from New York with Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
there's a scene in there where he's there. And they're talking about it, and they're like, if he follows, he dies. If you do this, he dies. If you do this, he dies. And it's like, that whole part is like, did they literally just come up with different scenarios where this person will just not be able to survive this? Or
right. So yeah, the whole ransom note would be looked over top and bottom 1,001 times over. But again, it is unusually long and has excessive amount of stuff there to get their point across. So, again, the ransom note, I've read it, it's so weird. Right, that's the ransom note. So, okay, remember how I mentioned this case was not handled correctly from the beginning? Alright, so the investigation should have been handled with more care, but it was not. And this is where I say, what the fuck? Okay, let's talk about what happened after Patsy finds the ransom note. God, I wanted to pull my hair out so bad. The only people known to be in the house at the night of JonBenet's death was her immediate family. Patsy, her mom, John, her dad, and her brother...
Burke,
there you go, her brother Burke. The ransom note contains specific instructions against contacting police and friends, but you want to know what Patsy did? You want to know? Naturally, she called the police. You want to know what else she did? She called everyone. And what I mean by everyone, I mean everyone. She called her family. She called her friends. She called her neighbors. Everyone under the fucking sun. And
it's almost as if she didn't want her daughter to survive.
Right. Two police officers responded to the 911 call and arrived at the Ramsey house within 3 minutes of the call. And they conducted a search of the house, but did not find any signs of forced entry. Officer Rick French went to the basement and came to the door that was secured by a wooden latch. He paused for a moment in front of the door, but walked away without opening it. French later explained that he was looking for an exit route used by the kidnapper, which the closed inside peg ruled out. JonBenet's body would later be found behind that door several hours later. Red flag number one, or red flag many? So... But wait, there's more. With JonBenet still missing, John made arrangements to pay the ransom. A forensic team was dispatched to the house, and the team initially believed the child had been kidnapped. And JonBenet's bedroom was the only room in the entire house that was closed off to prevent contamination of evidence. No precaution was taken to prevent contamination of the evidence of the rest of the house. So, wait for it. Meanwhile... Friends and victim advocates and the Ramsey's family minister, arrived at the house to show support. Visitors picked up and cleaned surface areas of the kitchen and the house, thinking that this would help de-stress the family. And didn't want... The house was already shambles and a mess because it was Christmas Day and it was not clean. The housekeeper did not come to clean the house. So naturally, their family and friends were just like, let's clean this place up to make sure that it's not that much of a mess. This potentially destroyed evidence. And by 8 a.m., Detective Linda Arden arrived at the house and waited for further instruction by the kidnappers, but
never was an attempt made to claim the money per the note. During this time, people came in and out of the house, and it was noted that John Ramsey was seen going into the basement at least two separate occasions by himself.
It's like, did they find the body yet? No? Okay, good.
Right.
Did they find the body yet? No?
Oh, good. Okay. Let me go check to make sure it's still there.
So, what he was doing down there, no one really knew. I think he staged the body, but again, that's my own personal opinion. We'll get into the theories in a second, but I know this sounds slightly biased, maybe it is, but it just sounds so fishy. Every single time I would read everything that was sent to me, I was reading all this stuff, and I was just, it's just so, so hair-pulling. So, hours went by, and dozens of people came and went into the house. No call from the kidnappers happened, and people were starting to get uneasy. At around 1 p.m., Detective Arden asked John Ramsey and Fleet White, a family friend, to search the house to see if, quote, anything seemed amiss, end quote. They started in the basement. Right away, just straight to the basement. John opened the door that Officer French had overlooked, and within moments found his daughter's body in the room. JonBenet's mouth was covered with duct tape, a nylon cord was found around her wrist and her neck, and her torso was covered by a white blanket. John picked up the child's body, ripped off the duct tape from her mouth, and then took it upstairs. When JonBenet was moved, the crime scene was further contaminated and crucial forensic evidence was disturbed for the returning forensic team. It was determined that she had already passed and had been laying there for several hours dead before being discovered. This was now a homicide.
I don't understand what people's logic is in any of this. It hurts my brain so much.
Right.
And I don't see what you're raging about when you're watching the videos and reading the reports.
Right. The reports that were sent to me, all the stuff that I read online, everything like that. It was just like,
there's a reason why I nearly flipped my laptop several times because, right. And
first of all, it's Christmas. Let's go over to their house and clean everything. Let's destroy any possible chance of finding out if there are fingerprints, if there's DNA, if there's like hair dropped anywhere.
We're gonna get into this. Like, we're really gonna get into it.
And then going straight to the freaking basement, being like, "Oh no, there she is!"
Coincidence? I think not. Like,
let's take this duct tape off her and carry her. Not even be panicked. It doesn't even sound like he was panicked.
Of course he was. Yeah, I mean, he was panicked about it. I didn't put like how he felt or anything like that. But when you find your daughter's body, Fleet, his friend Fleet, who was there with him, said that John screamed and was saying, like, my angel or something like that. He was just saying some things, but he quickly rushed the body upstairs to hope maybe something can be saved. But by the time that they looked at the body, they're like, bro, she's been dead for a while now. So, I mean, naturally, he had some sort of response. Whether it was true or not, I'm not going to put a finger on that.
How do you go to the basement? Not once, but twice, and then suddenly seem surprised. I mean, granted, maybe he wasn't acting, maybe everything was genuine, but still, it's just like, how do you go down there twice and not find it?
Right. So it was behind a door, a closed door and something like that, but the entire time that they were there, and why they did not open that door and find the body sooner, or maybe even, like, could have potentially saved her or something of that sort, we don't know. We'll never know because that time has gone and passed.
Yeah.
So, each of the Ramseys provided handwriting, blood, and hair samples to the police. John and Patsy participated in a preliminary. There you go. Preliminary. There's always one word. Always one word.
Preliminary.
There you go. Preliminary interview for more than 2 hours, and even this was done incorrectly. Burke was also interviewed within the first couple of weeks following JonBenet's death, but this was the last time that they would work with the police really willingly without someone there. The Ramseys were seen as not very helpful with the police. The New York Times reported, quote,
The Ramseys have constantly maintained their innocence, but for 4 months after the murder, they declined to talk to the police. Instead, they mounted a defense team that sounded like a defense lawyer's Christmas carol. 8 lawyers, 4 publicists, 3 private investigators, 2 handwriting analysis, and 1 retired FBI profiler. Exactly. If someone could sing that for us, that's what it was. They only wanted to do interviews when it was convenient for them, and even the governor of Colorado, Bill Owens, spoke out, telling the Ramseys couples to, quote, quit hiding behind their attorneys, quit hiding behind their PR and their PR firm, end quote. They have been shady since day one, and to me, a lot points to being an inside job. Again, all the things that these guys are just, like...
It was bad when you have the mayor of the city being like, what the hell?
Exactly. Like, to me, I just can't get over the fact that this is an inside job. So, then again, it's still an active case. Things, and there are some things that are kept hidden that may point to them being innocent. I don't know, again, because it's an open case. We're not allowed to look at the files. But we will not know until everything has been released and this case is solved. And I don't know if we're anywhere near that at all. So, the autopsy, it's available online, so anyone can go and get it. The official autopsy is out online for people to see. And if you are someone who can handle it, there are also autopsy photos, which I have seen and I've showed to Joe. They are, again, not for the faint of hearts.
They really are.
And it is something that you should just... don't do or don't look at if it's something that you know, just don't. It's a 6-year-old child. Come on. So the autopsy revealed that JonBenet had been killed by strangulation and a skull fracture. There was no evidence of rape, although sexual assault could not be ruled out. Although no semen was found, there was evidence that there had been a vaginal injury. At the time of autopsy, the pathologist reported that it appeared her vaginal area had been wiped with the cloth. DNA was also found on her person, including her panties and other parts of her body. Some people will say that she was sexually assaulted. Some say that she wasn't. The autopsy didn't say that they could rule it out.
Yeah.
They don't think rape was there, but sexual assault may have been something. So a garrote that was made from the length of a nylon cord and a broken handle of a paintbrush was tied around JonBenet's neck and had apparently been used to strangle her. Part of the bristle end of the paintbrush was found in a tub in a containing Patsy's art supplies, but the bottom third of it was never found despite extensive searching of the house by the police on the following day. DNA was also found here as well. On the brush. The autopsy revealed a vegetable or fruit material which may have resembled pineapple, which JonBenet had eaten a few hours before her death. This is where it gets a little tricky. So, photographs of the home taken on the day when JonBenet's body was found shows a bowl of pineapple on the kitchen table with a spoon in it. However, neither John nor Patsy said they remember putting that bowl on the table or feeding pineapple to JonBenet. Police reported that they found JonBenet's 9-year-old brother, Burke Ramsey's fingerprints on the bowl. The Ramseys have always said that Burke slept through the entire night until he was awakened several hours after the police. They're saying he didn't wake up until like 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. Yet, they did not feed them before going to bed the pineapple. Yet, his fingerprints was found on there. And then on top of that, they were also mentioning the bowl that it was in was a small bowl, and the spoon that was in there was a serving spoon and not an actual regular kid spoon or a spoon for
like
eating.
A teaspoon. Kind
of. Right. It was a serving spoon, so it was pretty big. So it's kind of like, how did that happen? To me, I think that was a huge, huge flag. Like, why was Burke's fingerprints on there? If he was sleeping the entire time, why would his fingerprints be on there?
Mm-hmm.
This brings me to the theories. All right, there are 2 main ones, and we will go over each one to help better understand each one. There is the family theory and then the intruder theory. The first one I want to cover is the family theory.
since that's the one we're all thinking about right now.
Right. So let's take a step back and look at the open case. It was believed that the Boulder police, that the ransom note had been written by Patsy, that the note and that the note and appearance of JonBenet's body had been staged by her parents in order to cover up the murder. This is the theory that I believe to be true, and others believe this as well. It is said it was staged because her parents were trying to cover up what might have happened, or even that Berg may have done. Let's get into it. Because this is one that I'm just like, so many people are stuck on this, and I am too.
It's like the most plausible.
Right. And maybe I'm not the best investigator. This whole thing sounds biased or something like this, but it could be. It probably is very biased. So the Boulder police initially concentrated almost extensively upon the parents, John and Patsy Ramsey. The police saw no evidence of a forced entry, and they did see evidence of staging of the scene, such as the ransom note. They did not find the Ramseys cooperative in helping them solve the death of their daughter. The Ramseys had said that their reluctance was due to they heard that a full investigation may not be conducted if it was an intruder. Like, it was just, they came up with these random excuses that just sounded childish and just didn't make any sense for why they were not so cooperative with the police.
Yeah, like, why call the police to begin with if that was your issue?
Right. So, one theory is that Patsy struck JonBenet in a fit of rage after a bedwetting episode and strangled her to cover up what had happened. So, sorry, let me backtrack a little bit on that. JonBenet, she was a bedwetter. She was a chronic bedwetter. She just had issues with her bladder as a little child. I mean, she's only 6 years old. And throughout the night, she had tendencies of bedwetting. And they kept, like, the doctors and everyone told her she would outgrow this. But Patsy struggled with her a lot with bedwetting. So they thought, you know, one of these days, she just snapped. So she hit her over the head after a bedwetting episode and then strangled her to cover up what had happened after mistakenly thinking that she was already dead. This theory went around for a while. I think my mom was also on this theory too, but it didn't really stick with me all that much. I thought it was more so because Patsy did not have any known history of uncontrolled anger. I mean, not to say that no one can get mad. It has happened. People do snap, and I've seen people who are very controlled at all times, and they just let it slip and it happens. Like, sometimes you just have a really bad day, and it can happen. So theoretically, the strangulation could have been a red herring aspect to conceal other elements of the assault and killing. Burke was 9 years old at the time of JonBenet's death and was interviewed 3 different times. The first 2 interviews did not raise any concerns, but the third one, just kidding, it came back clean.
God damn it. I was about to say, like, going back to that whole bad wedding thing and mom being, like, angry about it, that would also kind of explain sort of why her private parts were clean too.
Right.
Because maybe she had cleaned it before or
right.
after.
And that also brings me to this thing. So when the autopsy was done on her body, on her clothing, she had obvious stains of bedwetting. But when I looked at the crime scene photos of her bed was clean. At least that's what I saw in the photos. Whether the photos were really crap quality or whatever it was, I didn't see any stains on the bed. Like you would, if someone bed wets themselves, it's pretty big. Like you can see an outline of urine on there.
Yeah.
It's not exactly a clean thing. And yet, when you saw her clothing that was on her body at the time of her death, you could see the obvious stain of the bedwetting or of her having peed herself. And yet when there was pictures of her bedroom of the night and her bed was not made, their sheets were torn, like the blankets were torn off, or not torn off, but like moved.
Mm-hmm.
You did not see any signs, at least I didn't see any signs of bedwetting. And I'm just like, that was a red flag for me. And I'm like, did no one else notice this? Mm-hmm. I had that written in the notes and like on the sides where I'm like, hey, what's going on? But again, maybe the police may have noticed this or something like that. Again, it's an open case, so not everything is released. So, anyway, so the following years, it was cleared by, Burke was cleared by Boulder Police and the district attorney that he was not a suspect. I like to think otherwise. Personally, I think he had something to do with it. I think he is one who smacked her over the head. And out of panic from the family, they did what they did.
He came down and saw her eating his pineapple.
Right. Like,
oh, no, the hell you don't.
Right. Like,
smack.
There, I said, like, maybe he had woken up in the middle of the night. He was hungry. He comes down. He serves himself some pineapple. He's enjoying himself. That's why his fingerprints were found on the bowl of the pineapple. And I think he has the motive behind it because he's the 9-year-old older brother, yet his sister, his 6-year-old sister, gets all of the attention. Like, I think, like, she had spotlight all the time, all the attention. And I think that can push a kid over the edge. Like, he comes down, maybe he went to go do something. He comes down, sees his sister eating the pineapple, and it's just like, I have it. Because sometimes kids have that uncontrolled rage.
Yeah.
I know for a fact I've had episodes like that with me and my own brothers. Like, sometimes when we start off playing, and then it gets too rough, and then it starts to become a real actual fight,
yeah,
and fisticuffs happen. Like, shit like that can happen. And I think as a 9-year-old child, it's really hard to really hold that emotion back.
Yeah.
So that's my personal opinion, you know, and, you know, that happened, and he panicked, told his parents. They had already lost one child, and I'm sure they didn't want to lose another one, so the parents covered it up. There's an actual whole TV documentary based on this theory, and in the end, Burke ended up suing the living hell out of them, and he won.
Wow.
He sued them for defamation of character, which is true. I mean, there's no proof or evidence to show that he really did anything. And this was aired live on TV where millions of people watched it. Now people are going to think of him differently. So it is a defamation of character. So I can see where that comes from. But that being said, one thing that also really strongly supports this theory is because during the 911 call Patsy made to the police, when she found the note, the tape was enhanced because all 911 calls are taped.
Mm-hmm.
So they listened back on that tape and it was enhanced and people could have swore. It was later identified that Burks was in the background. They could hear a child, a boy's voice, saying, how are we going to handle this? Or how are you going to handle that? Patsy and John have always claimed that Burke slept throughout all of this.
Wow, that really makes my head hurt.
Desperately tried to find this recording. Unfortunately, I couldn't find it. All of like this recording has been like removed so that no one can find it. If you can find it, send that to me, please. ttimehorrorstories@gmail.com, or you can DM me at any of the social media. So, but I really, 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 really tried to find it because I really wanted to hear it myself. So, again, that's my theory, but, man, the more I feel like I'm covering the family theory, the more, like, I feel like I'm going to get something in the mail and I'm going to get sued for defamation of character. So, enough about that. Let's cover the other second theory, the intruder theory. The police and prosecutors following leads from intruder partially due to the unidentified boot mark left in the basement room where JonBenet's body was found and DNA, and the DNA that they found. So early persons of interest include the neighbor Bill McRonald, who was hired by Patsy to play Santa Claus. He had done this the year before as well, and he was in the house recently due to being close. You know, it was Christmas. He was later ruled out. Also a former family housekeeper, Linda Hoffman Hugh, was a suspect due to the fact that she needed money, and she had asked the Ramsey for some money, but they had turned her down. Her and her husband had motive, but both were later ruled out by DNA. a man by the name of Michael Holgoff, who died in an apparent suicide shortly after John Bonet's death, was also ruled out. Michael Holgoff was listed as a person of interest based on the two-person theory. It was him and another person named Todd Buss. They had entered the house and was only going to kidnap her when things got out of hand and a murder happened. That's the theory. Michael Holgoff was found dead from apparent suicide with a pair of high-tech boots found in his room with a shoe print similar to the one that they found on the scene. It was deemed that the shoe was the wrong size and quickly dismissed any other claims that he was part of the crime. So hundreds of DNA tests were performed to find a match, but nothing has come back. So on the night of the murder, there had been two windows that were left slightly open to allow for electrical cords for outside Christmas lights to pass through. There was also a broken basement window that John had broken once to get inside the house and was never repaired, and even one unlocked door. The theory was that someone entered the Ramsey's house through the broken basement window. This has been argued against because there are still undisturbed cobwebs, and the foliage around the gate had been undisturbed as well. There's also dust and debris on the windowsill, and there was no way someone could have gone in and out without messing all of that up. The area was small and cramped, but the theory continues that the intruder or intruders subdued JonBenet using a stun gun, took her down to the basement, and JonBenet was killed and a ransom note was left.
Oops. Stun guns usually leave burn marks on their victims, and they didn't find any of that.
Yes, they did. In the autopsy, there was unknown marks on her that were created by an unknown object. So they couldn't identify what it was. Potentially could have been a stun gun. It could have, but there was no positive identification of what it could be. So they just found other various marks and stuff on her body. Again, not everything was released because there were some things that were blacked out. Because, again, it's an open investigation, yeah, and they can't release everything. An idea that a stun gun was used is a theory that was thrown out there, but not heavily covered. Personally, I thought there was a lot of flaws in this theory. We can't ignore that the pineapple that was left in the kitchen and where they found that it was found in JonBenet's stomach. Someone had to have fed her this pineapple. She's a six-year-old child. How do you think she would be able to operate a can, get the pineapple? And Patsy and John always said that they never had fresh pineapple in their house. It was always in a can. Do you think a six-year-old is able to operate a can opener, pour the pineapple in a bowl, and then get a spoon? Like, do that all herself?
Well, do you think a two-year-old can go and run errands for their parents?
We're not going to talk about that, okay? We are not going to talk about that.
It's not exactly that far-fetched to see a six-year-old grabbing a can of pineapple and operating a can opener. I can see that happening.
But even if that is the case, what if she was down there doing that herself and then an intruder came in and was just like, oh, stun gun her and take her down to the basement? Like, it just...
Did they have your Batman, your cat phone case?
Oh my god, my cat phone case that everyone thinks is a stun gun. I don't know. It just seemed like there was a lot of things that were left unanswered. How did someone not wake her up? Stun guns aren't exactly the most quietest thing, and I could just imagine if they stun her, noise had to be made. She had to have fallen. You know, like, are they heavy sleepers, or am I the only one who's a light sleeper here? So, they were saying that she was kidnapped from her room. Her room is on the second floor. Her mom and dad are on the third floor. And her brother...
Then why the pineapple in the kitchen, right, on the first floor?
Like, oh, we stunned you. I'm sorry. Our apologies is to feed you a fucking pineapple. Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Or it's like, oh, you need that pineapple? Let me get it for you. Oh, let's go up to your room and then shock you.
Right. So, it just... Like, that pineapple... means something more. I don't know why I'm so dead focused on that pineapple. Pineapples.
Are you wanting pineapples with your tea?
No, I don't want pineapples. Give me pineapples with sweetened condensed milk.
Maybe not.
Sugar. I just need sugar in my life. I need sugar in my life. So, okay. And then besides the pineapple, let's talk about that ransom note. after they've shocked her, after they've killed her, they're going to just be like, let me write this ransom note that's unusually long and add these random things in there while this girl's already dead. Like, it just, none of it really connects the dots for me. To me, everything just seems
too convenient.
Right. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, how long were they actually there for to sit and have a practice ransom note or just, like, all those, doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
So, that's why I'm just so stuck on Family Theory. But some say it had to be an intruder because of her popularity with beauty pageants and how this could attract the attention of child pornographers and pedophiles. It was determined that there had been more than 100 burglaries in the Ramsey neighborhood in the month before JonBenet's murder.
Well, it was Christmas.
Right. That's very popular. And there are 38 registered sex offenders living within a 2-mile radius of the Ramsey's house. That's a lot.
That is kind of
that, a lot. That is a lot. So the media had set a focus on JonBenet's brief beauty pageant career as well as her parents' wealth and the unusual evidence found in the case. Media and everyone in general questioned how the police handled the investigation. Patsy Ramsey entered JonBenet in various child beauty pageants in Boulder, where she won the title of America's Royal Miss, Little Miss Sharflex. I don't even know how to pronounce that.
It's something French.
Right. And I can't pronounce French for my life. Little Miss Colorado, Colorado State All-Star Kids Cover Girl, National Tiny Miss Beauty, JonBenet's active role in child beauty pageants, and Patsy's reported pageant mother behavior was reported by the media after the murder. It was also heavily scrutinized, and a lot of people had a lot to say about putting such a young child in something like a pageant. JonBenet walked around in heavy makeup, her hair was heavily done, and outfits I thought that was a bit much for a child of her age. If you see some of these pictures, they're short skirts, she's showing leg. She's showing a lot and she's heavily in makeup, to each their own if that's what you want to do. But some say this was what fueled people to become obsessed with her and possibly formed stalkers that may have fueled the intruder theory.
That's understandable. And I have seen some of the costumes and other
outfits that she wore.
They had to wear.
Right. And I've seen other, like, even more recent stuff, like, nowadays, beauty pageants for kids, it's pretty out there. These kids are dressed almost as adults. And
yeah, like in bikini style.
Right. And you have people out there who are sick in the brain and they don't, like, they just look at these kids and just like, ooh, I want that kid. So that's what this theory was, that this was someone who was obsessed with her. And we'll get into someone who is obsessed with her that is involved in the case in just a little bit as well. So, but one of the main reasons why people were focused on the intruder theory was because the DNA evidence that they found. So DNA plays a heavy role in this. But personally, I think the DNA could be an accident. The evidence was so poorly kept and the scene was walked through... And the body was touched, that maybe it was transferred or something along the way could have contaminated it. In fact, let's get into a bit, because I managed to do a lot of research and found that the DNA is not as solid as they think it to be. This is the file that were sent to me and stuff like that, and things I was able to uncover. There are 3 different DNAs found on JonBenet. Well, not really different, there's 2 different ones. One of the DNA on there is JonBenet's. Mm-hmm. Second is a DNA of a person, of an unknown person. DNA profile originally located on JonBenet's underwear during the testing in the late 1990s and in the early 2000s, plus at least one additional as yet unidentified person or persons. Another reason why I think this case will not be solved by DNA is because of how mixed up everything is. The DNA profile referred to as an unknown male one, first identified during testing on the panties, may not be the DNA of a single person at all, but rather a composite of genetic material from multiple individuals.
What?
Right.
That kind of like indicates that there was several people involved, not just
one. Right. Or two. So as a result, it may be worthless as evidence. The presence of that DNA on Japanese underwear and long johns, be it from one or multiple people, may very well be innocent. This profile was developed from a minute sample that could have been the result of inconsequential contact with other people or transferred from another piece of clothing. So remember when her body was grabbed and she was taken upstairs and people were around her and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. That could have been DNA transferred from one person to another.
Like one person sneezing into their hand and being like, ooh, let me touch all this right. stuff.
So it is true. It would, like, it is true. This could, it could also potentially be the DNA of the actual killer. But it may not be. I can see this going to court and someone trying to, like, prove it by DNA. And then them going like, well, it's contaminated. So, like, I can just imagine the defense and the prosecution just tearing this to shreds. So, truthfully, it can go either way. The DNA could either solve the case or break the case. Truthfully, I think it would break the case. If someone is found and arrested, it will be hard for them to prove he is guilty because, or they are guilty because they can argue how the evidence could be contaminated. In fact, some even said the DNA found on the panties of JonBenet could be from the factory workers where they were made.
So did they just grab this out of the package and then, like, here, wear these without washing them? It's like, were these brand new underwear straight from the package?
Because I don't know.
It's like...
I don't know. I could not get that information. But who hasn't been guilty of wearing an outfit that they got that was brand new and they didn't wash it?
I mean, I've done that before.
Right.
I'm pretty sure.
Like, oh, this is a new shirt. I really want to wear this shirt. I'm not going to wash it. I'm just going to wear it the first time around and wash it, you know, the one time around.
Yeah.
But usually when it comes to underwear, you tend to wash that before
you wear it.
You wear it. But who knows? I'm not quite sure. So they're saying this was a theory that was put out there that the DNA found on there could be factory workers that worked on it. And they ran a test on this. A forensic investigator bought a package of underwear from a store that was wrapped, opened them, and tested them and found DNA on them from unknown persons. If the DNA sample came back from a false or contamination, then all the people they rolled out based on DNA cannot be rolled out anymore, and they've wasted years in time on this. I think they were premature in ruling out everyone based off of DNA.
Wow.
With the new technology that they've had since 2016, they've realized that not just one unknown male profile was found on her clothing, but two. Potentially, and that the first unknown male was actually could be potentially a mix of multiple individuals. Truthfully, they seem very unclear about the DNA that was found, but they ran with it. The DNA belonged to an unknown male person.
I got the reference.
The DNA was submitted to the FBI CODIS. But the sample did not match any known profile in the database. In the 2016, a report came back revealed that the original DNA, original DNA genetic markers from two individuals other than JonBenet. So they managed to find that there's more than just one unknown male on there. I believe the DNA is transfer DNA and could possibly have gotten on her when all the contamination happened in the house. Again, my personal belief.
Maybe it was all the people who tried cleaning the house. Maybe they found her body down there. I'm like, let's clean this up a little bit. God.
Or maybe the two times that John went down there, who knows? Who knows? We will never know or find out anytime soon.
I think I need alcohol with this tea.
Right. There's so much fighting on the inside with the DA department and investigation. Some people were stuck on the idea that this was not an inside job, while some investigators were stuck on the idea that it was the Ramseys. So much fighting was going on between them that two of the lead investigators in the case had opposing views. In the end, both investigators resigned from the investigation. Again, personally, I don't think this case was handled very well. As I've mentioned over and over again, too many people were fighting. The investigation was not handled correctly from the beginning.
I remember reading somewhere that Patsy and John were interviewed together and not separately, and everyone knows when doing interviews, you need to interview people separately. You can't interview them together unless, like...
The same people who worked on the OJ case was there.
Oh my god. I mean, it's mind-boggling because the more I read into this and the more I dig deep into this case, the more I wanted to pull my hair out. And I had files after files in front of me, and there was so much that I wanted to include into this, but I didn't, because this episode would have been ridiculously long.
It probably would have been a three-parter.
Yeah, so this is where things just get, like, another WTF moment. So Mary Lacey, the next Boulder County District Attorney, took over the investigation. This girl's shady. I'm just going to say she's shady. Everyone thought she was a little too close to the Ramsey family and was so stuck on the intruder theory that on July 9th, 2008, announced that as a result of, quote, newly developed DNA sampling and testing techniques, unquote, the Ramsey family members were excluded as suspects in the case. Lacey then publicly exonerated the Ramseys.
Lacey, like, never mind.
Yes.
Was going to say Lacey Peterson at Lacey?
No.
Weird. I know, but still, it's...
Shut your mouth on that.
It's too close. It's too close on a coincidence
right.
for that name.
So, in October 2010, the Boulder Police reopened the cold case. New interviews were conducted following a fresh inquiry about the committee. The committee that included state and federal investigation. Police were expected to use the latest DNA technology in the investigation. There was no new information gained from the interviews. It was reported that the investigation into JonBenet's death continues to be an active homicide. In 2015, an active detective, Becker, disagreed with exonerating the Ramseys, stating, quote, exonerating anyone based off a small piece of evidence that has not yet been proven to be even to connect to the crime is absurd. End quote. I agree.
Yeah, I agree too.
Right. So Stephen E. Pitt, a forensic psychologist hired by Boulder authorities, said, quote, Lacey's public exoneration of the Ramseys was a big slap in the face to Chief Becker and the core group of detectives who had been working on this case for years. In the end, both theories have their holes in them, but we will never know until the truth comes out. Now, we're almost there to the end, but let's cover something really quick and this is false confessions. There's been several of them. Everyone thought that there was a break in the case when an individual by the name of Alexis Valrun Ritchie, a 41-year-old elementary school teacher, was arrested in Bangkok, Thailand, on August 15th, 2006, when she falsely confessed to murdering JonBenet. She had previously been known as the name John Mark Carr, but prior to coming out as a transgender woman, she claimed that she had drugged, sexually assaulted, and accidentally killed JonBenet, but nothing could ever link them together. In Alexis's confession, she had provided only basic facts that were publicly known and failed to provide any convincing details. Her claim that she had drugged JonBenet was doubted because the autopsy indicated there was no drugs found in her system.
I'm having trouble understanding right now. Please try a little later.
I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
DNA samples that was taken from Alexis did not match the DNA found on JonBenet's body. With that, they let the pedophile go. So she's actually a registered pedophile. She was married with a wife and had two kids, but then they later found child pornography on her computer. And that's when she went into hiding. That's why she ended up in Bangkok. So once they let her go, she changed her name and began living as a woman. And there's nothing they can do. So there was another confession by sex offender and homeless drifter Gary Howard Alva, who only lived blocks away from the Ramseys at the time of the murder, and he had a history of sexually abusing children. In 2000, while arrested on a drug charge, police found a photo of JonBenet and a stun gun in his backpack. He later said that her murder had touched him very deeply, and he had felt that he needed to build a shrine to remember her. He even wrote a poem of her. He was later arrested in 2016 for child porn. While in jail on January 11th, 2019, investigators received a series of letters from Gary that he had wrote to a high school friend claiming he had murdered JonBenet, claiming to have done it accidentally. Quote.
And that was another false confession.
Well, nothing else has come from it. So I don't know if they're working on it, if he's potentially a suspect or whatever the case may be, if he was ruled out by DNA. We don't know. Nothing else. I couldn't find any other information on it. So, quote, I've never loved anyone like I did JonBenet, and yet I let her slip and her head bashed in half and I watched her die. Gary wrote in one of his letters, quote, it was an accident. Please believe me. She was not like the other kids. End quote. And his high school friends turned the letters into authorities. Nothing else has been heard from this as of yet.
Wow.
So, that was kind of one of the ones that's kind of sort of convincing. So again, I go back to DNA. Even though in 2008 the Ramsey family was absolved from any wrongdoing, I still don't think that that's the right thing, and others seem to agree. As recently as 2016, evidence suggests that the DNA evidence is actually a mixture of DNA, and more testing is expected to take place. The investigation was compromised from the start, so many red flags throughout the whole investigation. How can they be ignored? The ransom note was written on a paper that was found in the house, and they even found fibers in the duct tape that bound in JonBenet's body matches the same fibers on Patsy's clothes. Right. Dude, I have like six pages of evidence that was released out for people to, like, yeah, it, again, hair pulling. To this day, this case is not solved. Will it ever be solved? We will never know. If we had hopes that the parents would come forward with new information, it was lost when Patsy succumbed to ovarian cancer at the age of 49 in 2006. Some thought while on her deathbed something new would come from it, but she stayed quiet the whole time. John Ramsey is still alive and working in Michigan. He now stays with his new wife, Jan Reskins. Not even going to try and say her last name. It's so bad. As of 2017. Before finding his present wife, he was actually engaged to Beth Twitter. Those who know who Beth Twitter is, she is actually the mom of Natalie Holloway, who went missing in Aruba in 2005. I will cover that case in another episode, but yes, they did date for a little bit. Burke lives a quiet life.
Could you imagine being this guy and then getting with a woman who has a child, and then the child goes missing? It was just like, not again. Seriously, though, it's
the coincidence in that. But yeah, so Burke lives a quiet life and is employed as a software engineer. Burke opted to work from home even before the pandemic so he could avoid being around other people in the office. Might I add, he's kind of weird and socially awkward. He did an interview with Dr. Phil, and the whole time he was smiling and seeming like a total psychopath. Everyone's found it strange how he was behaving. He was smiling, he was laughing, he just seemed weird. But those closest to him said it's because he was smiling purely out of anxiety. He's a bit of a loner and socially uncomfortable. And of course,
you mean he makes people feel socially uncomfortable?
I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. When I saw that interview with Dr. Phil, I was just like, I'm cringing for you, Dr. Phil. I am so sorry. So yeah, it was pretty cringy. This kid kind of reminds me of the creepy head man.
Yeah.
So, of course, we're almost there, but I have to mention this. The stupid conspiracy theories. There are two that are worth mentioning. And one of them is that Katy Perry is JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
Apparently, some people believe the whole murder was staged. After her murder, JonBenet went into hiding, changed her identity, and resurfaced as the star that is Katy Perry.
Didn't they do like a facial comparison, yes, to what she would look like at that age? And there was like a 98% match.
Right. There's a huge match of her face and like how she would be aged and so on and so forth. It is, and then the songers, Katy Perry has a song called Wide Awake, and it's believed to be an undercover message revealing the truth about her past as JonBenet. I just thought this was funny. I mean, this whole case has been hair pulling, and I just had to add a little some sort of relief to this. Obviously, it's been denied 1,000 times over. Congratulations to Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom for their child and so on and so forth, and them living their life, but I'm pretty sure they had a laugh at this as well. And lastly, another conspiracy theory that I thought was worth mentioning was that JonBenet was killed for a satanic sacrifice. Apparently, a brotherhood term for devil is JonBet. JonBet, which is...
That's going...
quite similar to her already unique first name.
That's reaching out a bit far.
There is also a sacrificial ritual commonly performed on Christmas Eve called the last bud of the Christmas tree, making the theory kind of crazy and worth mentioning. I just...
This is kind of Screaming Rosemary's Baby type of situation, except the baby dies and is in the small secret.
Right, so I just thought those theories were worth mentioning. I was like, let's lighten the mood and add some theories in there. So, but this brings the whole thing to an end. Everyone from seasoned investigators to amateur sleuths to talk show hosts quickly settled on one or two of the theories: that JonBenet was slain by someone in their family, either accidentally or in a fit of rage, or that the killer then tried to make it look like a botched kidnapping, or she was the victim of a cunning intruder who intended to spirit the child out of the house, but ended up committing murder instead. We may never know. Dun 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 dun. Yes, that is the case of JonBenet Ransom.
I was gonna ask to read those files, but hearing all of that, I'm just like,
in the show notes, I will post the links of the places that I found a lot of this information from. I usually don't do this, but I should start doing this where I should start crediting where I get
citing,
my information.
Yeah,
and citing my information and whatnot. But this one, I worked on this episode. It was originally a lot longer. Like, I think it originally was almost like 12 pages long. And I know I had to edit it down, otherwise this was going to end up being several episodes long. And I was like, you know, I only want to make this a one-episoder. Let's condense this and just put out there. I know it's very biased. I know it was heavily on what I thought it to be, but it's just...
It's hard to not look at the situation and everything that was presented in it, in the sense that everything kind of points towards the family.
Right.
Because even the way that the ransom letter was written, the first few lines screams like somebody had a lot of thought put into this.
A lot of free time. Like, this wasn't something that was just like spontaneous, I'm going to write this all down. This had to be well thought out. This had to be something that someone was just like, maybe even pre-written, but it could have been pre-written because they found the pad that it was used on there. Mm-hmm. So again, what do you think? What is your opinion on the JonBenet case? Do you think it was an intruder? Do you think it was an inside job? Do you think the mom did it? The dad did it?
Honestly, ever since I've seen this, and with my family and everything, they all kind of were like, this has to be an inside thing.
Right. So let's get your guys' opinion on this. What do you think happened? You know, send us an email, teatimehorrorstories@gmail.com. You can DM us we're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You reach out to us. We like to hear from our listeners. Thank you guys for putting up with us and continuing to listen to us. We're hoping to get a lot of our fan base back. If you have any questions or any suggestions or anything that you guys really want us to cover, again, just reach out to us. But in the meanwhile, stay spooky, y'all.
Happy haunting.
Bye.